Hi, I'm Jayant Sriram and welcome to In Focus, the Hindu's analysis podcast. Thanks for joining us. This is the second part of our short series on the Science Nobel Prizes, those awarded for physics, chemistry, and physiology or medicine. So we covered medicine in our last episode, which you can find a link for along with this podcast if you're listening from our website or on the episode list if you happen to be listening elsewhere. Our expert guest for today is the same. That's T.V. Venkateshwaran, and he's a senior scientist at Vigyan Prasar based in New Delhi. So we covered the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine in our last episode. And we move on now to physics and chemistry. So to start with chemistry first, which is actually a very different case, because we've been talking about the Nobel Prize for Medicine, which is, you know, a very textbook case of scientists building upon the work of each other, and you know this takes almost a generation for this for the science to be implemented. Mm-hmm. The Nobel Prize for Chemistry, in fact, is something far more recent, very cutting edge.
Yeah.
Pun intended, because it is for what's called a genetic scissor. But that's about as much as I know about it. So I'll let you explain the concept of it. What is this genetic scissor? What is this tool?
Okay. See, actually, how this discovery came itself is a very interesting story. Okay, I mean, the story starts with a person who is not part of the Nobel winners, but within the scientific circles and people with the scientific background mind, there is a huge debate going on that perhaps this person has been overlooked. This person is actually Spanish, Mojica.
Okay. Right.
So when Mojica was a student about 1980s, I mean in early 1980s, he was working on bacteria which thrive in high saline condition. So he was trying to find out how those bacteria are able to manage the salt stress. Okay. So that's also again the early periods of molecular biology. So he was looking at the genetic information in these bacteria. Okay, so this is what happened. What he found was that this bacteria was having, some of these bacteria were having a very interesting kind of a genetic structure within them. In the whole genome, there were parts of it which was very interesting. Let's take a word like a Malayalam, okay, in English. Of course, you write it in English. You can spell it from this frontways or backwards. It's same, right?
Yeah.
So this is called a palindrome, right?
Yeah.
So basically, what he found was that there were lots of palindromes in palindromic sequences in the virus. I mean, the kind of virus that he was. I'm sorry, the bacteria that he was examining, the salt resistant bacteria that he was examining. One thing you know is that when you are a bacteria, your genetic information is so low. Evolution would take care to ensure that you don't have the luxury of having wasteful stuff in your genome. You know, I mean, for example, if you have a very big house, I mean, you can collect things and then keep it. But if you are living in a very small place, now and then you have to chuck out something outside, right? I mean, you can't keep everything inside. In fact, even big libraries cull out books and throw it away when it becomes impossible to maintain them. If the racks are overflowing, right? So, in the same way, the bacteria would not be able to keep all the things that it has. And so, he was wondering that why this palindromic sequences, which seems to be making no sense, are inside this bacteria. He was wanting to have money to do studies, etc. He didn't get enough support. But still, because of his own passion, he continued to work on it. What he found interesting thing was that between two palindromic sequences, there were some genetic sequences which were like part of the viruses which attack the bacteria. You and I get a viral attack, we get a common cold, sneeze. So, virus will attack every living stuff. There are virus which attacks plants, there are virus attacks animals, there are virus which attacks bacteria. Okay. So, what he found that whenever a bacteria is attacked by a virus, the bacteria takes the part of a virus and keeps it between this palindromic sequence. It's like a wanted poster. Next time, the same virus or same type of virus comes inside that particular bacteria, there is a system inside the bacteria called as a guide RNA, which compares and then takes this bacterial genome, I'm sorry, this invading viral genome to the bacteria's mechanism, shows it that this is an invading virus. Then there is a enzyme in bacteria called as Cas9. Not only Cas9, there are many other enzymes. Of course, Mojica did not find the Cas9, but he found enzymes which can actually cut the invading virus genome. Okay, once the viral genome is cut, it's like earlier times we used to have this tape recorder tape, right? I mean, once you cut the tape, I mean, you cannot play it. Okay?
Right.
So, in the same way, the virus will not be able to replicate and then cause damage. The virus will be like inactivated completely. That's a thing that he found basically somewhere around 1993. He established some of these important aspects. Okay. Then comes these two people who are being awarded Nobel Prize now. Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer Doudna. Okay. So the story actually starts from Charpentier. The Charpentier was also, you know, came to know about this palindromic sequences. So she started working on it. Then she collaborated with Doudna, who had a technical capacity to work on genomes. So they both combined and then they found that you can actually do the same thing that a bacteria is doing in a test tube. Let me explain it in a very simple way. Let's assume that you have a Word document. Okay, you have typed lots of stuff. Okay, assume that in that, let's say about 600 pages, you have written a novel. Okay, and you have put some character name with some name. Okay, after you finished your work, suddenly you realize that that character name is not a good idea. I need to change that name. So how do you do it? Will you read through pages and correct everywhere? You might miss few, right? So what do we do today? I mean, if you're using a Word or one of those kind of software, you go to a function called find and replace. So actually there are three action taking place. There is a find, there is a cut, and there is a replacement. Okay, so there are three things which are happening. So in the same way, what Charpentier and Doudna proved is that you can create an artificial system where in any genome, you can find a place, cut that part of genome, I mean, one small part of the genome, and replace it with some other new genome. So something like a find and replace. So this find and replace will have three aspects. So one, find. That happens because of RNA called as CRRNA, which is like CRISPR RNA. Okay, one RNA. Then your cut takes place because of an enzyme called Cas9, and then finally the replacement is taking place because of a trace RNA. So there are three aspects in it. So what these people found was that you can actually do that on a test tube. So they demonstrated it somewhere around 2011, 2012. Of course, things have improved much beyond that. Now we know more than Cas9. We know also many other kinds of enzymes which can do that kind of cutting. Okay, so those things have happened. That's a different story altogether. But this is a first establishment of how your theoretical knowledge about how the bacterial immune system works, you can use it to develop a gene editing tool. So now this is called as a gene editing tool. The CRISPR Cas9 for which they are given is called as a gene editing tool. There are many other editing tools same way. I mean, people have developed different editing tools. So this, with this, you can actually do a gene editing today. something like, for example, in a Word document with the find and replace, you can do editing, right? So in the same way, you can do gene editing today with this technology. So the Nobel Prize Award has essentially gone to the tool that they have developed. That's also what the Nobel Prize citation also mentions.
Right. So it's not as if they're using the same type of bacteria that was discovered, as you said, in the 90s to do this. They're just using the mechanism.
It's using the mechanism because you don't know you need to use bacteria at all. For example, in the CRISPR-Cas9, you won't be using any bacteria. You'll be using this three molecules, you know, like CRRNA, then the right. Cas9 enzyme, and the trace RNA. Okay. Depending on the kind of material that you are working with. For example, if you're working with bacteria, then you'll be using the bacterial RNA. If you're using something else, you'll have to use, you know, and so. But essentially, these three molecular product is what you are using to do this find and replace. Of course, so you can also you calling it as cut and paste. Okay, so cut and paste has only one thing. It cuts and then paste something. But here, actually, it's also all the three aspects, finding, cutting it away and replacing it with some new genetic material is what you can do here. Precisely, right. Very, very precisely.
Right. So you're extracting the RNA or the enzymes from these organisms that can do this cutting.
Now, for example, this enzymes you can produce artificially in your laboratory. I mean, you don't need to develop, I mean, you don't need to extract it from. Basically, your knowledge came from there, how the molecular mechanism works, okay, at a genetic level. You are using that knowledge to develop a tool. So that tool has been developed now.
Right. So just before we quickly move on from this, what are some of the, I mean, of course, this is very, as I said, very, very cutting edge, very advanced.
Yeah.
What are some of the applications that, you know, that you can see for this?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, like the applications are mind boggling. What people are talking about are mind boggling. In fact, most newspapers and media reports talked about how in future, you can eliminate genetic disease. You know, I mean, you have a baby born with, let's say, a genetic disorder. Essentially, it means that in the genome, there are some spelling mistakes.
Yeah.
Wrong kind of alphabets are over there. That's all. It's like some spelling mistake in your Word document. You have misspelled a particular word in multiple places, right? So, same way. You edit it, right? You simply find that spelling mistake, replace it with the correct spelling. That's it, right? So, in the same way, people are saying that tomorrow using the same technology, not necessarily Cas9, many other enzymes and many other such a gene editing tool, that you can correct the genetic disorders in people. So, you can fight against genetic disease in a huge way. Many of the genetic diseases are really very appalling, right?
Right.
Your living condition becomes really very, very terrible. So, you can remove some suffering from life. That's a futuristic thoughts which are going on. As of now, gene editing in human being is not permitted or encouraged. Although there are, let's say, urban legends which say that underground people are doing things like that, but practically it's not that easy. So it's not something that is permitted and approved anywhere in the world because we need to tread cautiously. But on the other hand, let's say, for example, you want to produce insulin. Okay. Today also we are doing something like that. We have created a genetically modified bacteria which actually secretes insulin, right? Basically, you are using the same molecular mechanism to produce a chemical. Anyway, our body is producing multiple chemicals. For example, human body produces something close to about 40 lakh kinds of proteins. I mean, insulin is also one kind of a protein, right? So,
right.
Chemical factory, in a sense, if you look at it. Chemical factory with very little environmental pollution, one can say so. So, now you can develop a genetically modified bacteria where you are more sure of what you are getting. Okay, so you can inject the right kind of gene sequence for producing human insulin you collect that gene from a human and then insert it into a bacteria, then you will get insulin which is suitable for human. That kind of work one can do, for example, right? So this kind of applications are potential. I mean, medical field, that there is a huge potential for it. People are also talking about genetically modifying plants in a way that it can protect itself from vagaries of nature. You know, I mean, high saline land, water stressed area, plants which can survive. Some of these things are futuristic thoughts which are there about this particular technology.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's all so fascinating. And just to move on to the final one, the final prize, which is physics. Uh-huh. So I think this is for, of course, various research into black holes,
uh-huh.
which, people have been talking about black holes for a long time. I think even the Nobel Committee acknowledges that it's been a kind of a bedrock of science fiction, space films, etc., for a very long time. So is this a case of basically a theory that is work on a theory that is step by step been confirmed?
Yeah. So basically, if you look at it, I mean, the prize is awarded to three people, but it is divided into a half. So one half is going to Roger Penrose. The remaining half, two people are sharing. That's how the Nobel Prize has been given. Whereas, for example, in the medicine field, the three people are sharing it equally. One third, one third, one third. Okay, so here it's not actually one third. So because it's two separate areas which are interrelated, which are given Nobel Prize this time in physics. To Penrose for establishing theoretically the existence of black hole. The theoretical existence of black hole, that it is possible according to physical laws that we know today. That's major discovery of Penrose. I'll come to Penrose a bit later. I'll talk about these two people now. It is Gensel and Gase, these two people. What they did is something very, very interesting. They established that there is actually a supermassive black hole at the center of Milky Way. The mass of that supermassive black hole is 4 million times of our sun. Okay? 4 million times. Something close to 4 crore times of mass of the sun. That's sitting at the center of our black hole. How did they prove that? You can't see a black hole. Okay? So you have to prove it kind of in an indirect way. Let's take, for example, Earth and sun. Okay? Assume that you can't see sun. Let's say you are in a space and then you are looking at the solar system. For some reason, you are not able to see sun. There is something blocking you from seeing the sun. But you are able to observe Earth. You are able to observe Earth. You are able to calculate the distance between Earth and sun. And you are also able to calculate the mass of Earth. Okay. Then if you do this, then it's very, very simple to calculate the mass of sun. In a very simple way, if I have to explain. Let's take, for example, a ruler, okay? Let's say 1 foot ruler, about 30 centimeters, okay? You put, let's say, 100 grams on both sides, both edges. You keep your finger in the middle, somewhere around 15 centimeter. Then your ruler will be balanced on your finger, right? I mean, because weight on both sides are same. Suppose if I increase weight on one side, instead of 100 grams, I make it 200 grams, then I need to move my center point towards the heavier object, right? So which will mean that the distance between the center of gravity and the object which is rotating will increase. So in a very simple way, I mean, the one can calculate the mass of the central object around which another object is rotating. So if I want to find the mass of the center of our Milky Way, I need to find an object which is going around the Milky Way, closer to it. If you take it very far, many other forces will act on it. So you need to find a star which is closer to the center of Milky Way and find out its orbital characteristic. So what these people found is a star called S2. That's how it is given a name, S2, which is basically 400 times the Earth sun distance from the center of Milky Way. Okay, 400 times. 400 right. times is actually very huge, but when you are talking about the center of Milky Way, it's not very, very far off. It's just 60 billion kilometers away from the center of Milky Way. Okay, they found a star. They started observing it from 1992, and then they were able to calculate its period, the time it takes for it to go around the center of Milky Way. From that, compute the mass of the Milky Way. The mass of the Milky Way, they found, is from this computation, they found is 4 million times the mass of Sun. And imagine 4 million Sun sitting inside less than 400 times the Earth sun distance. Okay. Something like about 100 times the Earth sun distance. You know, I mean, something that order. So, right. It means that it has to be very, very dense. Very, very dense. If an object is that dense, then it can be nothing but a black hole. Right? I mean, so physics tells you that it has to be nothing but black hole. And that's what precisely Roger Penrose proved. That if the density is what matters. You know, I mean, the total mass and what is the size of that object, then it can create singularity, then that would become a black hole. That's what Roger Penrose had actually theoretically predicted. From Roger Penrose's prediction, if we take our sun and crush it to the size of a lime, crush it to the size of a lemon, roughly right. about 3 centimeters in radius, then our sun can become a black hole. Okay? Before Roger Penrose, there were speculation about a kind of black hole. They were not calling it as black hole. They were calling it as a dark star. So they thought that suppose if a star is really huge, you know, something like a lakh time bigger than our sun, then that huge mass will create such a huge gravity on its surface that light cannot escape. So they were looking at huge stars. They were calling it as dark star. That is where the Roger Penrose came and played a very important role to figure out how the singularity can occur. Okay, where the laws will completely cease to exist. Beyond singularity, usual physical laws, you cannot apply and do any physics. That's what he established. The theoretical finding was from Roger Penrose, and the practical demonstration that there is actually a massive black hole came from these two people. That's how they got this award.
Sir, thank you. That was a fascinating description of all three of the prizes, and I think in a very relatable and understandable way too. So thank you so much for giving us your time today and joining us for the In Focus podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.